This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C and Tan Chen Li. It is 6 a.m. Thursday, a very wet 10th of March.
Exactly. It was so wet that I actually went to the underground car park this time and actually was willing to pay for the car park fees.
Oh my goodness.
Really? Because I just didn't want to get wet.
Aren't you the last of the cheapos?
I'm not a cheapo, right? And I still did it.
You don't have an umbrella?
I did, but it was so heavy, the rain, I didn't want to risk wetting myself.
Okay.
From a weather standpoint.
All right, all right, all right. All right. Yeah, so for those on the road, please drive carefully. There's a lot of puddles everywhere. And, well, unfortunately, the last few days, we've been seeing lots of pictures of flash floods, cars being stuck here and there. So, nonetheless, just be a little bit careful on the road. Drive slower a bit. And don't forget to switch on your lights because it's still extremely dark. And I think the warning is that this wet weather is going to continue for a few days. In the meantime, what are the interesting stories we have? Philip, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, at 7:15, we have a very interesting conversation with Dr. Vinod Balasubramaniam as we talk about this one SOP 9 guidelines policy that was discussed yesterday with the health minister.
Satu equals sembilan,
is it? Let's just categorize everything into just one big theme.
Yeah, okay. And then what do we have at 7:30, Chenny?
And then at 7:30, we're going to continue our political lineup or coverage that we have. Today, we're going to talk to Johor PKR Chairman YB Syed Ibrahim.
Oh, interesting stuff. As we know, we've been continuing this, or we've been very focused on the Johor state elections, right?
We have been.
We have interviewed almost every single political party there is. We invited all of them. Not all of them have said yes, but I think almost all have had their invitations.
Still got time.
For those who feel left out, reach out to us. We would like to hear from you too. But at 7:45, we'll be talking about 5G.
Yes, very interesting development there, because we heard yesterday, right, or 2 days ago, that there might be a potential shift in strategy as they're contemplating shifting from that single wholesale network to a dual wholesale network model.
That was also revealed in the Star business paper yesterday. So we're following up that story. So do keep it here at BFM. But to take us to the break is Where Have All the Flowers Gone by Joanne Baez. And that was Do You Believe in Magic by Loving Spoonful.
I do.
What sort
in
of
a
magic?
Harry Potter way or in a real way, Philip?
I believe in it. It manifests itself every day in my life.
What sort of magic are you looking
forward to? Are you trying to be sarcastic this morning? Because it is a nice song, though, nonetheless. Anyway, it's 6:08 in the morning, Thursday, otherwise known as Friday, Junior, here on The Morning Run. And it is, of course, 10th of March. Now, just to bring everybody back to reality where there is no magic, and just remind everyone that there's a lot of hard work when it comes to physical fitness, sleep. We have this article from Bloomberg, because, you know, Morning Run is all about the money, right? And we love Bloomberg. So, Chen Li, you chose this story. Tell us about it, please.
Yes, because other than money is important to us, sleep is also very important to us. And I think quite a number of us actually have this sleep challenge. And this article actually talks about weight training and how it can improve your sleep more than running. So for those of you who think that, okay, I do a lot of aerobics exercise, as in like running or cycling or swimming maybe, you know, and then I should be able to sleep well. But the study actually shows that, no, not really. For those who actually do a lot of strength training, you actually can sleep better than just doing running alone, which is, well, actually surprisingly, I mean, for me.
Mm.
Yeah, and the article actually have what there's some quoting some facts here, right? Mm. So among the 42% of people that they actually put in the study group that didn't get at least 7 hours of sleep at the start of the study, the sleep duration increased by average of 40 minutes in the 12 months of the study for those people who only did resistance exercise, which is those who only did strength training.
Okay.
And then compared to the group that only did aerobic exercise cardio, they only get an improvement of 23 minutes.
Oh.
Maybe the answer is that we should do both.
Yes, yeah. I think that's the obvious answer. Well done. Do you want a present after this,
that's where
Philip?
That's where the magic has just suddenly seeped into my mind, which is perhaps I need to do both.
Oh my, you mean that wasn't common sense? That wasn't just common sense, Philip?
Well, I think I do agree with that article in the sense that you just can't do one type of exercise for sure to just get better overall outcomes. Although we need to talk about how deep that sleep will be. I also had this research where I was reading previously where if you exercise, the time of when you exercise also really matters. For example, I heard like they did an experiment of exercise in the morning, in the noon, 1 p.m. and in the evening. And they found that if you did the exercise in the morning, you tended to sleep much better.
I actually find that if I were to do strength training, I cannot do it closer to my sleep. I for sure cannot sleep.
Because you've got your adrenaline running through your body, right? So, and it takes a while for that to kind of wind down and then for your whole body to relax, your mind to relax.
Exactly.
So for some people, exercise in the evening won't work. Okay, as y'all know, I'm the crazy one here.
You are the crazy one.
Yeah. You are.
I have done my exercise already. I start at 3:15 every day when I'm on air. And it's a combination of cardio and weight training, depending on the day. Sometimes it's even just yoga. And I do it partially because you're right. I find, number one, time isn't against me, right? Mm. I just don't have the time the rest of the day. But it's also because as the day progresses, because I've exercised, I've got adrenaline to do this show. And then I wind down gradually towards like evening time. I find that's, that works for me.
Yes, I think it works for a lot of people. And I think that's the biggest challenge with the Morning Run team. You know, we have talked a lot among ourselves about the challenges of sleep. And I think it's a function also that because we start the show so early in the morning, we have to make sure we close, you know, our research and documentation very late at night, right? By 8:30. So our ability to wind down, it's also very challenging. So like when we wind down, for many of us in the studio, it's by 10 p.m. and then you've got to be awake by 4 a.m., right, to prepare for the show. Or 3 for you because you have not job. But essentially for most people, no problem. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges. How do you wind down essentially to also have a good night's sleep? So
I agree with you. We all have different tips and tricks, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so mine is reading short stories, because if you read a whole novel, you never put it down. Don't read The Economist because you'll be thinking about the show tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah, so I like New Yorker. I like reading things like David Sedaris, something not very serious. But I think it's the lifestyle, right? So you make all these choices to make your life more holistic, you know, so you have enough sleep, you eat well, you exercise to ensure that your physical health is also in peak condition. And I think regardless of the job that you do, these are just practical ways to live your life.
And I must say, actually, like, you know, the point about the weight training, I think resistance training is so important to complement it with the cardio, I have to say. Because like I'm going through this whole program, I need to also lose weight. And I find that when I start complementing the strength and resistance, it does help me actually manage my weight better.
And you lose faster.
And I lose faster. And then that translates to better sleep.
Correct. Yeah, for women particularly, it's important to do some weight training to prevent osteoporosis.
Yes.
That's already been proven, right?
That's right. That's very important.
And the other reason I'll do it, don't laugh, guys, if I stop weight training, I'm already a very short 5'1". Apparently, if I don't do any weight training, as I get older, I'll shrink even and become even smaller and smaller.
It helps you become more nimble and flexible, doesn't it, Chowning?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. But do let us know what you think. When do you exercise? Do you find a combination of cardio plus weight training is the way to go? You can tweet us, our handles at BFM Radio. You can even WhatsApp in 018-789-8899. Let us know what you think. But up next is a message from us, BFM 89.9. And that was Inside by Skin Shape featuring Aaron Taylor, a very chillax song, right? Makes you want to go back to bed and cover yourself with the
duvet. In this cold weather especially.
Well, it's 6:18, Thursday, the 10th of March. And we've got a story coming up, kind of like a little bit of politics, a little bit of social media, a little bit about fake news.
And technology.
Everything rolled into one. It's an article from the Singapore Straits Times. Mm-hmm. Chen-Li, you picked this as well. Tell us, what is it all about?
It's about the Korean presidential election, which we have already known who's the new president of South Korea, which is PPP, or People Power Party candidate, which is Yoon Suk-yeol. So during his presidential campaign, he actually made an avatar of himself using deep fake technology to engage young voters. And it was actually very well received by the public.
We should go and look up this avatar, Philip. Does this look much better? I mean, what is the avatar all about?
It's better, actually, because the real Yoon himself is actually very strict and stern.
Yeah, I can see his picture on Bloomberg, guys.
But the avatar version of him is much more humorous and satirical, you know, because basically it's just an avatar of him. But his campaign staff is the one who did all the talking, put all the words in his mouth.
Is this what it takes now to basically change the image of a crusty old man? Is that what is required?
Potentially,
because,
yes.
Because I think in the past, what usually happens is like there's this whole need to remake or rebrand that person physically and present, right? Mm. Make them more polished and all that. So I think people have just given up on that thought. It's like, okay, you do you. Let me just create different alter egos so that we can target different segments.
Yeah, I mean, send out that alter ego to the right crowd, right?
Exactly.
And it doesn't even matter whether that alter ego is not nothing close.
No reflection of the values of the person.
What does it say about us as society then?
It is terrible in my view. Why is it that, you know, we have to use technology to project different images to different segments of society? Because if we recall, this guy or this president, where he won by a very narrow majority, was the same discussion we had a couple of days ago about these angry young male misogynists, right? They want to abolish the women's ministry. So what he does is that, okay, there is a core image that he cannot change, doesn't want to change, which is fine because you're incept to the principles and hold to that. Why then decide to create all these different images to pander to different segments of society when you know ultimately you're not going to deliver it in principle and value?
I think what he was trying to target is really the young voters, as what the a few days ago when we were discussing about the anti-feminism that he was campaigning on. And he's trying to reach out to these young voters, and young voters are very into technology. So if you have an AI version...
This is like almost like fake technology.
Yeah,
exactly. But you know, some of the young Korean voters actually think that, yeah, this may not be the real him, but I buy it.
Oh, no. So then...
They're disillusioned.
Yeah,
then.
Exactly. So that's also my question. For me, I wouldn't... I mean, if it comes to the voting thing, voting for an AI versus the real guy, I would want to look at the real guy and, you know, assess his credential and vote from there.
Okay, so this tells you how screwed up sometimes you all are, right? And I'm not just saying, you know, because we cannot differentiate between what is reality and what is social media, what is fake news, what is Instagram, what's Facebook. I think it's all, right? All platforms. I'm going to take a big brush and just stroke across all the platforms. So in a way, we have decided that we like going into this rabbit hole. And we just go deeper and deeper and deeper, deeper, deeper into that. But the problem is, it's the same rabbit hole. We don't look at other sources of information, other sources of media, to come up with a conclusion as to what is perhaps the real, as close as possible, real story about a person or real information about some news out there in the world.
I fully agree with you, because what happens is when we get into this rabbit hole, the natural instinct is about being selfish, about basically placating my own ego. And so then we end up having these blinkered lights about what we think is right or wrong, and we don't have an open perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the world has become very divisive about this, right? Yeah. So you're always going to be seen as either in camp A or you're going to be in camp B. And if you don't fit into any particular camp, then what happens? You have all this cancel culture, which I also find very confusing. In a way, we think, okay, it's 2022. I don't always agree with Mr. X about his views, political views. But I think we should be prepared to at least listen to these views rather than just cancel them out completely and say, no, I'm not going there, I'm not going to listen to it. Then what have we learned in the last 20, 30 years of formal education? Not very much, right? If we can't even have a discussion.
Yeah, but I think that I think is a fundamental issue. So if you bring it closer to Malaysia, because we've been having a whole series of elections. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, our conversations are all about personality now. Mm-hmm. And we've had this whole series of political discussions happening. And it is invariably also quite a lot about personality. And so then I'm just thinking, are we going to see Malaysia also enter this kind of realm like what we see in South Korea, right? Where people start, you know, creating different digital deepfakes about their leaders as well going forward to basically pander to new segments.
Potentially, it could be. I mean, of course, it involves some budget to do this, I suppose.
Not necessarily.
I don't think it's that complicated. You know, you just need a team of very dedicated people who are willing to do this for you. And they can do it very, very quickly. And the problem is, they become so professional. If we're talking about social media platforms, right, they become so professional in portraying a certain look, feel and view of, let's say, a political leader. You can hardly differentiate what is real from fake anymore. These are things are done very tactically.
Yes.
They're not done randomly.
Oh, I know. It's definitely coordinated, I'm sure.
Very, yes.
And I think, but what I'm seeing is, I think we've had this whole conversation of cyber troopers and such taking place, right? In even our political realm. But I think the question is, do we take it to the next level, right? And create all these different physical images and such?
Yep.
Well, Who knows? GE15 is around the corner, right, guys? Maybe we might see different avatars from the different political leaders in this next Malaysian general elections. I think it will be interesting times. But up next, we have the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there is Across the Universe by Fiona Apple. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Tan Chen Li, Philip C, and I'm Wong Shaoning. It is 6:39, Thursday, 10th of March, and just one more day to the weekend.
36 hours.
36 hours. Okay, guys, as usual, we are looking through the international papers for headlines that we think are interesting and that maybe we want to highlight.
I like to go first.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
Well, the Russian
It's all about me, we can tell, Philip. Go.
The Russian-Ukraine crisis has reached near our shores in Thailand. Thousands of Russian tourists are currently stranded. Approximately 7,000 Russians are in limbo in locations like Phuket, Koh Samui, Pattaya and Krabi. So I think, as the Thai tourism authorities say, we have to be good hosts and take care of everybody.
Oh, okay. What else do you have? Chen Li, do you have other international news?
Oh, yes. I want to talk about China.
Okay.
So yesterday, they came up with the PPI and also the CPI numbers. PPI is for Producer Price Index and CPI is Consumer Price Index.
What do these numbers tell us?
This month number, this is actually not this month, February number. PPI has actually rose to 8.8% from a year earlier, but it's actually down from the January number of 9.1. Consumer Price Index remains unchanged at 0.9%. So it shows that... inflation is still not too big in terms of consumer. But the factory gate inflation is a bit of a moderation there.
So economy good or bad? We're not sure.
Not sure, but a little bit of a pressure there in terms of all this Russian-Ukraine war and all that. So it's a little bit slowing down.
It sounds like a moderating economy, which comes to which brings to light the whole question we had, I think, about GDP projections for China, right? Which I think China was forecasting 5.5%.
Yeah, that's the guidance from the MPC meeting, which is, I think, rounding up this week, actually.
And we had a conversation with Pei Shen Liu from NetWex, and she said that projection is also a tad bit optimistic, isn't it?
Yeah, but Pei Chen was also quoted in this Bloomberg article that I'm looking at. She says that February data does not factor in the recent surge in commodities and energy prices.
So, i.e. things could get a little bit hairy.
So we're
going to
see more upside pressure on the PPI inflation.
Okay, so I'm going to be talking about China's little neighbor down south. It's Hong Kong. This is the New York Times article on it, and then it's the pictures are what are most interesting about the article. So do check it out. But the headline is "Empty Stores and an Exodus: Hong Kong's COVID Crackdown Stirs Panic." As you know, Hong Kong was trying to test every single resident in Hong Kong. That has actually been put on a hiatus. But what is the pictures show is that a lot of empty shops. Hospitals at full capacity, people actually lying almost looks like the car park of a hospital out there, not in the hospital itself. And a lot of expats trying to leave the country as soon as possible. It's like what we experienced 2 years ago in the early part of COVID-19.
Yes. You paint a very dire situation, and we have heard quite a lot of negative stories coming out from Hong Kong. And one story, just to follow on what that was that there was also a report that Cathay Pacific, the Hong Kong-based carrier, workers spent 200 years in quarantine in 2021.
200 years?
Yes.
You mean 200 days?
Cumulatively, 200 years.
All the entire staff.
The entire staff, 200 years, 73,000 nights in quarantine hotels in its city's Penny's-based COVID-19 isolation facility. That goes to show how that zero COVID impact is really impacting Hong Kong. Because, you know, we were talking yesterday about airlines recovery, right?
Yes.
Airlines like Singapore Airlines are nearly back about 60% to their pre-pandemic. Cathay Pacific, 2%.
Oh my, that's going to be really tough, right? The cash burn per day, per month. $200 million. Can you imagine? It's very tough times. Now, another country that has elected a new leader, South Korea, they've elected Yong Suk-yeol. He won the election with the thinnest of margins, I think less than 1%. He had 48.6% of the votes. The closest contender was actually Lee Jae-myung, who was the Gyeonggi governor. He only got 47.8%. 8% of the vote.
It was really a pit between the Conservatives and Liberals. I think the incumbent Moon Jae-in was relatively popular, but I think the scandals tainting the Liberal Progressive Party, I think, did dent the Liberal movement, and that's why the Conservative, I think, managed to prevail.
So definitely tune in tomorrow morning at 7:30. We will be looking at the South Korean presidential election with greater detail with Jonathan Berkshire Miller, Senior Fellow at the Japanese Institute of International Affairs. Bear in mind, South Korea is one of Malaysia's largest trading partners, so it's interesting to see what comes out with this new president and what kind of policies he will implement.
Yeah, and I want to go back to Russia-Ukraine a little bit over here, because Ukraine has just, President Zelensky actually said that he's open to discuss with Russia on the demand of neutrality as long as it's given security guarantees from them and also from the US. So I think this announcement has sort of eased the market a little bit. Mm. We would see later that the market has actually...
Correct,
yeah. So this has actually affected the market a little bit.
It's very interesting.
Positively,
correct.
You don't see much in terms of, you know, the war activity happening. I think there is a ceasefire taking place.
Some cities have been bombed very heavily overnight.
Overnight,
yeah.
I see.
Okay, very quickly, for all ye people who love cryptocurrency, a bit of good news. Crypto this morning, I spoke too soon because Bitcoin is down a little bit. But definitely closer to the 42,000 levels for Bitcoin and 2,700 levels for Ether. And that's because Biden is pushing for a coordinated approach to crypto oversight. So I think markets are a little bit more cheered by that. But that's all the international headlines we have for you. Up next, we have the local news. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash. I think politicians should think about this song, some of them at least, anyway.
Very soon in their careers.
Yes, very soon. 6:50 in the morning, and of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, Philip C, and Tan Chen Li. So, ladies and gentlemen, what shall we start with?
Maybe I start with the positive news. The number of unemployed persons in the country in January declined to 680,000, bringing unemployment rate to stand at 4.2%. As according to our chief statistician, Dato Sri Dr. Muhammad Uzir Muhyiddin.
Good number. I wonder how well they're paid. That's the big question.
Yes.
Is it minimum wage, which is 1,200, or is it the possible new minimum wage, which is now apparently being debated? Which
up to 1,500. Yes. Mm. Well, you know, yesterday you were the Debbie Downer. Today I will be the Donald Downer, because today in the Star
newspaper... Don't take that role from me.
Page 5, Malaysians throw away 86 tons of face mask every day.
I know, I feel so guilty. You know, I see on the road for you people who are throwing out on the road, don't be so disgusting. Pick up your litter along the way. Come on, that's terrible. But aside from it, I still feel guilty because I use a mask every day, right? What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. But they were saying cloth mask is not so effective,
No,
right?
It's not effective. It's been proven not to be effective. Use a good quality medical mask. But there is waste from it, you see?
Yeah. Mm.
So and then how do we navigate this?
Yeah. How to balance this, right?
No, you have to dispose it responsibly. That's the big question mark. And how do you do that, right? 86 tons is incredibly amount, a lot. But and Auntie Wong won't be happy if you keep on throwing it along the roadside.
Did you call me Auntie Wong? Somebody's going to die shortly after this. Staying on the topic of COVID-19, let's talk about the new SOP, of which there's just one SOP, but there are 10 requirements, and that's starting from April the 1st, according to the Malaysia Reserve. So it's going to be a different change in terms of how we manage the COVID-19 as we transition. Not that we are in, endemicity?
Endemic.
We are transitioning to it. But do tune in at 7:15 because we'll be talking to Dr. Vinod Bala Subramaniam, who is the senior lecturer and co-lead at the Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences. We'll go into all the details of the SOPs, whether they really work, and a little bit of a discussion in terms of whether we're ready to open our borders come 1st of April.
And to add on to the COVID-related story, Kyrie yesterday said that it's only 30% of children who's vaccinated. So time to wait and see is over. So we should really get our kids out there to be vaccinated. As we see nowadays, Omicron seems to be infecting people around us already. So don't wait. Go for it.
As you say, 30%, which means that only over 600,000 individuals have registered. And I think they've only vaccinated 1.1 million so far.
Why? Why is the question, right? Mm. I think we know the data. We know the numbers. then how do we address it?
I think parents are still indecisive. They're just not sure if this is something good for their kids.
Okay.
So we need to address the concerns from parents.
Yes. So it's a combination of information, a bit of public relations. Mm-hmm. Schools need to play a part, you know. NGOs need to do a bit. And I think, of course, the Ministry of Health also has to do their part and make it easy so that parents have no issues when it comes to taking their kids for vaccinations.
Yeah, I think we've seen some developments in the past 1 week, right? Firstly, they basically expanded it to allow Sinovac for the children. I hope that allays some concerns. And then later you saw that there was some research that we wanted to shift away to a kind of a nasal spray kind of solution for those who are fearing needles. I don't think there's so much amount of technology that's going to shift people's perspective. I think people must fundamentally believe that the vaccine will help their children. And I don't know how you're going to get that discourse through the finishing line.
Yeah, there has to be a discussion on that and a bit of a convincing, whether you use science, I'm not sure, data, more open discussion, acknowledging perhaps the side effects from any vaccine rather than saying that's not the case. Now, I'm turning my attention to the Malaysian Insight, and this is allow EPF withdrawals, Anwar tells government after earlier reservations. I'm like, we are like third year into the pandemic. We've allowed multiple withdrawals to the tune of 110 billion ringgit. So few members actually have enough savings for retirement. Why this discussion again?
I think for me, I just take
all this. Is it just populist measures?
I think, as we enter the silly season of electioneering, because of the Johor State
election. Because, by the way, it's not just Anwar Ibrahim, because former Prime Minister Najib Razak also asked for the same thing.
Yeah, so I think it is basically going onto the ground, is seeing basically people struggle, and they believe that the right solution is further withdrawals from EPF. I think as a station, the longer term solution has to take into account our savings, right?
Yes.
And so there are other ways to do that. I think I share with you a populist measure.
Yeah, and very quickly on COVID-19 related to this is the death of the 13-year-old boy, the unfortunate death, Ravnesh Kumar. A report apparently has come out to say, doctor says in a peer review report presented by the Health Ministry to the parents, and this is a Free Malaysia Today article, they say it was not due to COVID-19 vaccine. So hopefully this allays some concerns. But up next, Philip, I can see he's eager beaver.
On the upside, retail sales beat forecast, grew 27% year-on-year fourth quarter. Great numbers there.
Thank you for shopping, Philip.
My pleasure.
Up next, we have the 7 a.m. news bulletin, and to take us there is Dancing in the Moonlight by Tin Lizzy. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.